So hello everybody, we're here today to talk to you about pre-anaesthetic assessment with a particular focus on the pre-anaesthetic bloods. I'm Jane Scott, I'm an advanced practitioner in small animal medicine.
And I'm Lara, I'm a clinician in small animal medicine.
So firstly, Lara, perhaps you could tell us where you would start when you're performing a pre-anaesthetic assessment.
Yeah, so always with the basics. So obviously starting with a full history, and this includes knowing any previous medical history, the most recent medical history as well. So if we have a dog that is presenting with a history of nonstop vomiting and regurgitation, that is important to us, because if it needs an abdominal ultrasound, then is safer to anaesthetize this dog rather than to just sedate. It's important to know as well current medications, the dosage, the frequency, when they were last taken. When thinking about medications is easy to forget, but is also important to check if a dog, a cat has ever had any bad reactions to any drugs, any allergies. And just as a matter of kind of checklist, I also check if they've had any previous blood transfusions as well. Then it's important to consider why we're seeing this dog, the signalman. So why we're seeing this dog, which breed of dog are we dealing with? So we know brachycephalic breeds have an increased risk of regurgitation. So then again, if we have a Frenchie and we have to GA, we have to anaesthetize, then we should have things like suction ready, for example, in case they regurgitate under anaesthetic. We also have to be mindful of any changes they can have with respiratory rate and after effort after surgery or procedure that could be concerning for aspiration. Another small little thing, but obviously lubricate the eyes is paramount. And finally, I suppose as well, is the age of the patient we're dealing with. So if we have a very young puppy, a very young kitten, or sometimes those really small breed doggies or toy breeds, the fasting period prior to a procedure will have to be obviously a little bit shorter, and we should prioritize procedures with these younger animals. So they should be ideally happen first or first thing in the day.
Great. So following taking your history, I assume you'd want to perform a full physical examination of the patient. So what are you specifically looking for on this examination?
Yeah, of course. And this physical examination is always part of everything we do and should always be performed. And I think the main thing that we try to understand is, do we find something, any contraindication, any concern, any abnormality for the procedure we're wanting to perform or for an anaesthetic? Is there something else that we should investigate further as well? So I think one very important thing is the temperament of the dog, of the cat we have in front of us. And this can sometimes be underestimated. So how anxious is this dog? How nervous? How worried is this cat? How stressed? And if we're dealing with these very worried animals, it is often very beneficial prior to a procedure to give some anxiolytics like gabapentin. So just the day of their appointment, if they come in with some gabapentin on board or some trazodone, if there are no contraindications, that will make our lives a lot easier. It also will make it easier, for example, for IV access. So rather than having a really fidgety doggy or very nervous or bouncing, we'll have a dog that perhaps is a little bit more relaxed. But if we can't place an IV, then, and we're seeing a really anxious and stressed dog, then we know perhaps my sedation will have to be intramuscular rather than stressing a dog and trying to fight to place an IV catheter, for example. The other thing as well is, what is the body condition score? So a Labrador with a body condition score of 8 out of 9 or 9 out of 9 should not be dosed for the actual body weight. So it should be for a leaner body weight. So that's the other important thing when we're calculating the drugs. Then we have the auscultation, and this is another super important part. So do we have an arrhythmia? Do we have a murmur? How would we characterize it? Is it if we do have a murmur, is it left-sided? Is it right-sided? Is it apical? Is it at the base of the heart? And then we should think about cats as well. They're not small doggies. And quite often, you know, they could have a heart condition without an obviously loud murmur. So consider the age of the cat as well that we're wanting to anaesthetize for a procedure. And then, is this dog or is this cat painful? Is it pyrexic? Do we have normal vital parameters? And I do believe the combination of taking a good history, a good physical examination are paramount prior to a procedure, a sedation, a general anesthetic, because we can then understand how fit and healthy a dog is or a cat is for a procedure, and we can then anticipate any possible complications. And then obviously after we take history, we do a physical examination. There is a very important place for pre-anesthetic blood. So I'll ask you, Jane, so when we do these pre-anesthetic bloods, what are you looking at when we perform these?
Thanks, Laura. So yes, I think the patients that we're seeing at Paragon, they're probably slightly different to the general population that perhaps our audience sees more in general practice. So it is much less common for us to be seeing healthy patients on the medical service that are just coming in for routine procedures. So obviously in those healthy patients that there is going to be less potential benefit of performing pre-GA bloods. It has been reported that sort of routine screening of clinically healthy patients will only probably result in less than 10% of them having something clinically significant found, and less than 1% actually having an abnormality that would lead you to change your anaesthetic plan. We're also often seeing older patients as well. So most of our patients, they will have had a routine haematology biochemistry performed as part of their initial diagnostics at their referring practice. But this can be from a number of weeks prior. So it's important for us to assess our patients again on the day that they come in for their procedure. So a minimum database for myself would be for us to look at the PCV, the total protein. I'd want to know the blood glucose, the BUN, the creatinine and the electrolytes. So we have an EPOC machine, which is a very useful patient side test then to provide us with this information. And normally I would also be thinking about USG and urine dipstick as well.
Okay. And when would you be concerned with any abnormalities on this database?
One of the big topics that we're often asked about is whether elevations in liver enzymes are a contraindication to anaesthesia. So as a general rule, I would say no to that. But what is most important is that we do actually look at the markers of liver function. So these are your total bilirubin, your bile acids, your albumin, your urea, your cholesterol. We also have a facility to measure ammonia in-house as well. But these are all going to give us a much better indication of how well this patient is going to cope with a general anaesthetic rather than those liver enzyme elevations themselves. Having said that, if obviously the main purpose of our anaesthetic is just for a routine procedure and the liver enzymes were elevated, then I certainly would be advising to the owners that we do a little bit more investigation of why those values are elevated before proceeding with the GA. So I suppose in regards to elevated bile acids there, so this does potentially suggest an abnormality there with hepatic function or a portal vasculature anomaly, which is not a contraindication to performing a general anaesthetic, but these cases do need additional consideration. So we're going to particularly consider our choice of drug, our doses. And it's obviously the potential for prolonged metabolism and prolonged recovery for these patients. And perhaps they would benefit from us having some input from an anaesthetist. I'd also say that the bile acid lab reference ranges sometimes are a little bit lower than perhaps where I would be concerned in these patients, that there is actually hepatic dysfunction. So certainly if the postprandial bile acids, if they're getting above 30, then you're going to start to pay a little bit of attention to that. But really, I'm only really getting particularly concerned if they're sort of getting above around sort of 50 micromoles per litre. We've also then got the hyperbilirubinemia there. So we need to remember that that can be due to pre-hepatic, post-hepatic causes. And something important to remember is that if we've got a patient that we know has hyperbilirubinemia, then we don't need to look to perform a bile acid stimulation test in those patients. So we already know that that result is going to be abnormal. And then another important parameter I've mentioned there is the albumin as well. So this is of quite big importance, really, because of the impact that this will have on anaesthesia and the procedures that we're doing. So if it's just mild, it's probably not going to have a huge impact. But if we've got a more moderate to severe change, so particularly albumin levels below 15 grams per litre, we're going to start to be more concerned. So being hypoalbuminemic will lower the oncotic pressure. So it can affect our blood pressure management. It can make that quite challenging during an anaesthetic, and it'll also have implications with sort of delayed wound healing as well. So, you know, I wouldn't be proceeding with an anaesthetic and a dental procedure, for example, if the patient was severely hypoalbuminemic, and we certainly want to be investigating that first. If we have a patient where we can't avoid an anaesthetic for how we need to proceed with the case, then I'd be considering what I could do to support that oncotic pressure and blood pressure. So, for example, I'd be considering plasma products as well. So perhaps, Lara, you could continue to explain a little bit more about your considerations on the bloods.
Yep, absolutely. So if we continue with the biochemistry, another important subset of parameters are the electrolytes, and if we have any electrolyte disturbances. So what is the potassium? What is the sodium? What level do we have the chloride? Is there any marked elevation? Because to be fair, any sort of moderate change on these, and even sometimes mild changes, can affect our general anesthetic. What is the calcium? We know hypercalcemias, they can be dangerous, and we should correct these prior to a general anesthetic. Another parameter to consider is our urea and creatinine. So do we have an azotemic patient in front of us? And we should know, and we should make, you know, the families aware as well, in a CKD patient, there's always a risk of worsening further their renal function. So we should just be careful, make sure we have adequate fluid therapy to maintain blood pressure, and monitor it as well, renal parameters post-procedure, to see if we have caused any sort of an acute on chronic or any worsening of the renal parameters. Glucose should always be checked, of course, in young patients and in diabetic ones. And I do it in these patients prior to a procedure or prior to an anesthetic and as the patient is being recovered. But just bear in mind, sometimes we can have little surprises. So, you know, if we have a little poodle and it's presenting with GI signs, so vomiting, diarrhea, lethargy, nothing very specific, and we're worried it could have a foreign body, we take some radiographs, there's an area that is suspicious, and we say it's in the clinic, and we're considering doing an exploratory laparotomy. And we do a pre-GA set of bloods, and there isn't a stress leukogram. The cholesterol is actually a little bit on the low side, and the glucose is normal, but it's towards the end of the reference range, or even low, or even actually hypoglycemia. I would have loads of red flags with this dog. I would not be anesthetizing this dog without performing an ACTH stimulation test to exclude hyperadrenocorticism. And obviously then we would have an answer and we would need to ex-lap the dog. But equally, management of blood pressure under anesthetic in Addisonian cases can be very challenging. So, you know, these are all important considerations to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about the hematology? Obviously, we've both spoken there a little bit about the biochemistry. So what are you looking at on the hematology?
Yeah, I would want to know, I think the main thing to me when looking into a hematology, and this obviously in the context of a general anesthetic, is, do we have an anemia? And if so, what is the degree? We know patients, dogs, cats with chronic diseases, with CKDs, will have these chronic non-regenerative anemias, these anemias of chronic disease. And once again, if we have a mild anemia, is not really a contraindication for general anesthetic. If we take into account age, young puppies, kittens, they have an age-related anemia. And again, this is not really a contraindication to do further procedures. However, if we have a dog or a cat with a moderate to severe anemia, now this is more concerning and we should investigate these anemias further. The main thing that would worry me is obviously a red blood cell count, a PCV, but equally the hemoglobin concentration, and concentrations of less than 6 grams per deciliter. These patients are severely anemic and we should not anesthetize them without a prior blood transfusion. They will not be able to cope very well. So that would be one concern with the hematology. And back to you, James. So we could finish maybe with considering other pre-anesthetic diagnostics that we may want to do as well.
Yeah, so I think this very much depends on the patient, the presenting disease, the current status. So we are very lucky that we work closely with our cardiology team. So one thing I'd be considering, so any patient with a new heart murmur, or cats with a heart murmur, or where I suspect there could be sort of cardiac involvement in their condition, then I would advise that they have an echocardiogram. I appreciate that's not always going to be possible in general practice. So running a pro-BNP may be something that you do have access access to in your practices. I have discussed this previously with our cardiology team, and their opinion is that measuring the left atrium to aortic ratio is probably sort of most helpful in this situation, but it is obviously a little bit more technical. So as a screening tool in general practice, they do feel that that could be quite a useful way to be able to tell if a murmur is significant, or whether referral for echocardiography is indicated prior to the patient being anaesthetized.
So we do hope you found this session helpful. If you have any questions, then feel free, as always, to get in touch with the medicine department. You can do so via email at medicine@paragonreferrals.co.uk. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.